Hey, everybody. Welcome to Just for Variety. I'm your host, Mark Malkin. Today is May 24th, 2023. On this week's episode, I'm talking to the Lord of the Rings of Power star, Ismael Cruz Cordova. The actor first earned attention as Mando on Sesame Street, followed by roles on Ray Donovan and Berlin Station. In The Rings of Power, he plays Arrendur. He is the first person of color to portray an elf on screen in a Lord of the Rings property. The series received horrendous racist backlash for its diverse and inclusive casting. But no matter, because the streamer is putting a lot behind the series. So much so, they already have another 4 seasons planned. In fact, I spoke to Cordova from the UK, where he is shooting season 2. I'll be right back with Cordova, but let's first take a look at this week's Just for Variety column. I recently spoke to musical impresarios Mark Shaman and Scott Whitman about their new Broadway hit, Some Like It Hot. The show received the most Tony nominations this year of any production, earning 13 noms, including Best Musical. I asked the two what it was like having Mariah Carey come on board as a producer. Here's what Shaman had to say.
The thing that me and her bonded about the most when I was working with her was she loves Bullets Over Broadway. She can recite that entire movie verbatim and is really funny. She can play all the parts and she's really great at them all.
Check out more of my chat with Shaman and Whitman at Variety.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome back to Just for Variety. I'm talking to the Lord of the Rings of Power star, Ismael Cruz Cordova.
Good morning, good afternoon. Where are you? You're in London, right?
I am in London.
You're in London? Are you shooting the second season? Are you allowed to tell me?
No, I can tell you. I can tell you that I am in London and that I am shooting the second season. a few things that I can say, but that's as far as... Well, that's not as far. There's other things I can talk about for sure.
Congratulations. I think the first time we talked was at the Emmys.
Yeah.
You are in it. You are in the Lord of the Rings world. You've earned your cred.
You think so?
Oh yeah. how does it feel? You know, when we first talked, you know, it was first sort of just happening, and now it's, you know, it's you're filming the second season. You know, you've talked about in the past how you've always wanted to be a part of this world. Mm-hmm. Do you believe you're a part of this world, or do you have to pinch yourself still on set going, I can't believe I'm getting to do this?
You know, this is the first time that I do 2 seasons of something. Mm-hmm. And so it's a very different experience, and you feel very secure about certain things. But I still have those moments. I still have those moments where I'm like, you're here and you're doing this and you really fought for it, you know, and it worked. And you, not only you're here, but I do love my role. I really am in love with my role and I care so much for him. And, you know, he's everything that I've ever wanted to play, including like that badassery. You know, I see some shots sometimes, and that cloak is, you know, that's moving in the wind, and that jaw is clenched, and I'm like, yeah.
The ears are on.
The ears are earing. The elf is elving.
So just tease us. Season 1 to season 2, how is season 2 going to be different than season 1?
You know, I think when you leave us on season 1, we're in a time of relative peace, you know? The worlds are, again, relatively united and allowing each other to do their thing. And by the end of that, you see that everything just gets turned upside down. like in its head. This evil that we felt is an evil now that we have experienced. We don't know, but we've experienced. And I think that's where season two takes us. It's there's no longer peace. There's this evil that has actually turned everything in its head and has turned every relationship in its head. And there's we're journeying through that.
How many scripts do you get? Do you get the scripts really in advance, or is it so top secret where it's like someone comes to your house, it's a secret guard, here's a script, read it, we're gonna take it away from you?
I was close to that. it's things like that have happened when you get a courier, the wait outside, you read something or you approve something, you go back and you give it back. For the first season, I had to do that for the poster, for the image, like approval and whatnot. Somebody came, they waited outside. I had it in my room. I did a Zoom with people, and then they're like, all right, go walk outside on Zoom and give it to the person. But the scripts are quite guarded and quite top secret, but it really depends, because mm-hmm. sometimes you get some in advance, some not. As you know, this is a living thing, and there's writing and rewriting and rewriting. So it really depends. First season, they were coming in almost as we were shooting. There was a lot of faith involved in your performance and in what you were trying to create. I'm kind of like going around the question, because you know the methods of security as well. You don't want to say them. There you go, Amazon.
They're listening. Mm-hmm. You've talked about how hard you pushed to get this role, that they turned you down. You've been very open about that. Why were you so, there's a lot of egos in Hollywood, and there would be people who would be like, no, I got the role. They wouldn't say, like, they turned me down twice and I kept going for it.
Well, I don't know. It's out in the open. I never asked if I was okay to say it, but it happened. And I think it's, I don't think it's at the detriment of anybody that turned me down. I think there's process and there's opinions and people fluctuate. And as I said, this is a living thing. And roles get written and rewritten and rewritten. But also there's a beautiful discovery. And when you have an opinion and you get proven wrong, and there's a humility in that. And I think, there's humor behind this now. But I know, I think it's important, because I think it's very important for me to humanize this process. I think it's important to me to speak to whomever I need to speak to, which is, in life, this my story is very localized in terms of like acting, but my life has had a lot of rejections. I grew up in a very poor environment. My family, for the most part, I grew up around a lot of illiteracy. I got a lot of people who weren't chosen, a lot of people who were stowed away or thrown into where I. Kind of worker town, poor town. My mom was a teen mom, cast away. This other one, indigenous and black, cast away. Women, cast away. There's a lot of that. So I grew up with that rejection all around me. And that's something that's driven me. And I came from that all the way to here. For somebody to tell me no about a role, I'm like, y'all don't know me. You really don't know me. Because I understand that there's processes and there's rules and there's this and there's etiquette, but all of that is made up. And I on top of that, there's a belief, and I have a belief in me and my craft and my art. And it's not that I feel, and again, I speak about these things very openly, because even though acting is something that makes you feel magical and that is extremely whimsical, and the things that we create are really just transport you. Acting itself, even though it provides magic, it is not magical, and we're not magical beings. This is craft, and mm-hmm. and I can speak about my craft in a way that I'm confident, because I understand it, and it's repeatable and it's workable to
talent is a bit more ephemeral, but I think I work with a lot of people who are talented that don't have any longevity. And I work with people that are mildly talented, that are extremely hardworking, and they produce wonderful things. So, and that hard work comes through the screen. So yeah, I got rejected many times and I kept saying no. I was not going to take a no for an answer because I knew what this role would entail. I knew what it would do in the scope of fantasy. I knew that I wanted to be part of something historic, especially with the elves. The elves have been, you know, historically portrayed as white and Aryan and this and a thing. And I wanted to be an elf. I was a mountain boy. I was in love with nature. And I knew it would change things. And this is not the first that I'm in. It's not the first. I've done a bunch of firsts. First this, first that. And if somebody could withstand the wave of bullying and harassment and racism that came afterwards, I knew it could be me. But for the better, we needed to tilt this. We needed to break it open. And but just as an actor per se, the role just felt so close to my heart. He is a guy that leads with love. He is a warrior, you know, measured, a bit dark and brooding. I have what they call the resting bee face. but inside, I'm, you know, I'm extremely sensitive. I have a bleeding heart, but I'm quite tough and I'm quite decided. And this guy loves, and that love leads him through the entirety of Middle Earth, carrying a message, fighting for that love, wanting to keep that promise no matter what. And there's a crack, you know, there's a question. Who are these people? Who are these humans? Why do they do what they do? And that's me to a T. I am so freaking curious about people's stories and about that sensibility. And I'm 1,000% a fighter. So I fell in love with this character. Everything that I'm telling you of my story. And I was not going to take a no for something that I believe so strongly in and that I wanted to be part of that change. And I'm very proud to say that we really stepped on the ant's nest. I didn't just step on it. I was just doing some tap dancing on that thing. It had a psychological and mental health impact. That's something that I'm also very, very open about so that people understand that what they do and say online really hurts people, really has an impact on us. But that price that I was ready to pay, I paid it with all the knowledge and the pride. And at some points when I was already over the hill of that thing, I was sipping my tea, seeing everybody tear their head, like a hair off, being like, no, why is he black? And I was just sipping my tea, scrolling and chuckling.
That could be your motto, scrolling and chuckling.
That's my merch.
You've talked about how you knew, you know, playing an elf, being an elf of color, that was going to create some backlash from racist trolls. Did the studio, does Amazon also sit down with you and say, hey, we've got your back. Obviously we support it because we've cast you, but is there a procedure in place where the studio comes and says, we're here to help you. Let us know what you need.
I think it was a growing, I think we grew together in that knowledge. You know what also happened around the time, I mean, COVID exploded, George Floyd. Okay, so these guys, and the thing is that I came in hot to the show in terms of this. I came in very hot because again, I haven't been the first. It's not the first time that I'm the first. I've had backlash. Right. No, Miss Bala, being Afro-Latino, playing some a character of a Mexican. I got backlash, you know, from my community. Mexicans aren't black. Mexicans are not, you know, all these things. Mary Queen of Scots. I was playing David Rizzio, an Italian court member, you know, to the queen. Like, I've been on this thing.
Right.
So I came in and I said, this is going to happen, guys. You know, this is going to happen. And that got fueled by, I mean, when my first headshot came about, I was like, whew. And then George Floyd. But when it came, when George Floyd happened, I had meetings with them. And together, they were, Amazon was, gave me their ears and gave me their hearts and allowed me to, and open a position for me to be a leader and to be, and to give my feedback. And they already had structures in place, but there were new structures created through these conversations that I had with them. And they put them in place and we would speak. You know, big shout out to Vernon Sanders, who I have a very close relationship with, Jen Salke, and that whole team that really, Latasha Gillespie, really listened. And together, it's been for the best. It really has been for the best. And that support has come through. And again, I kept joking. I was like, y'all didn't know that. Y'all didn't weren't expecting what you got when you hired me. Because I don't see, I mean, many, it's a privilege to go into a job and not have to pioneer and not have to think about this. But I don't have that privilege in that sense. Everything, I am very conscientious that what I do is always political in the sense of the impact. So I take that. A lot of actors don't want to take that. I get exhausted by it. But I also feel that I have a calling for it, and that my story and where I come from asks for it. You know, I've been in this journey of from voicelessness to voicefulness, you know? And again, being on the maybe this list or that list, because let's say, well, you get an award, awesome. But even being considered in of someone's list for this, it doesn't escape me. And it's not just, these awards are not just for this role. These also awards for the vindication of your journey. Mm-hmm. So being included there, I feel it's all been worth it, you know?
You said, you said, you've been open about, you know, how that affects your mental health. What do you do to make sure, you know, you're able to survive? Do you have a therapist at times like this? Is it sort of you go into yourself? Tell me about that process.
Yeah, no, I definitely, I mean, I have a journal in practice. I have a core group, also friends that are very, let me make sure that my battery's not going to die real quick. Okay, no, we're good. I have a core group of friends who are very supportive, but I do also have a therapist that I've been working with for a while. And I actually started with the therapist at the top of COVID. So we've been together for 3 years. Also, Amazon had, when we came back from the hiatus and all the conversations, we had an onset therapist as well that we could go and speak to, and she also would be around, and it was a beautiful presence. I love seeing her there, even if we didn't speak. I knew there was someone there seeing me for completely. It wasn't just an actor. It was like, it's a feeling, living person over there that, you know, myself and the other cast members, Sofiana Bete and other cast members that were going through the racist backlash, it wasn't just going to work. By the time that we woke up, we were exhausted waiting through all of this. So I'm very diligent about that. I'm a huge advocate of therapy. I wish it was more accessible, because it is not.
Yeah.
But yeah, you need support when this happens, because the voices are so loud and they're coming at you from so many places. And even when you don't interact with social media, they make a point of reaching you. My phone got hacked. I had like bank account, like attempts of being hacked. My PayPal got hacked. My friends got like messages. I got death threats. I got things mailed to me. People found out my address. It was, you know, it was a lot of that. So, are we still here? That's the thing.
That's right. That's right.
We're still here.
You're scrolling and chuckling.
Scrolling and chuckling, drinking my San Pellegrino. Season 2.
We're going to take a short break, but when we return, Cordova talks about the Marvel role that got away. Plus, find out what he thinks about the so-called feud between the Game of Thrones and the Lord of the Rings. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Just for Variety. I'm Mark Malkin. Here's more of Ismael Cruz Cordova.
The therapist you said that was on set, was that for shooting season 2 or season 1?
That was during season 1, yeah. That was during season 1.
That's pretty incredible. That's pretty incredible. I don't think most people would think like, oh, they need a therapist over at a Lord of the Rings TV show, but it just completely makes sense.
Yeah, because I mean, everything was happening at the same time. We were also during COVID, we were shooting a show in a place that we couldn't leave and we couldn't have visitors. You know, that was already tough. And then on top of that, you have this massive undertaking just as an actor without any other backlash. You're in a show,
right?
Had all the buzz in the world, and that can be, you know, crippling. That can provide anxiety. But then on top of that, a few of us had this added pressure of, again, the world barking at you that you are worthless and that you shouldn't be part of this and that you're not allowed to be part of that and vile, you know. The humor in it, you know, said it once, was like, I just didn't know how many languages you could say the N-word, you know? It was insanity. It was absolute insanity. But with that comes the good part, the amount of love.
Right.
The amount of love. The way that people showed up and exactly what I was doing it for. The little kids and the adults that were finally able to dress like the elf that looked like them, you know? And when I find them all over the world, into Italy, Brazil, Germany, and somewhere there's always a little arrondir, you know, dressed up. And it's not only that, it's fringe, you know? So It's not just a racial thing. It's a fringe aspect, you know? Mm-hmm. So you get a lot of people... I got this pair of guys in Germany, the two trans guys that came and talked about that, you know, that they felt very familiar with the character because of how fringe he was, you know.
Wow.
And that was just fantastic. I love that. So whatever the other thing, we're all here to win it.
So now are you going to be in the Lord of the Rings movies that Warner Brothers is developing?
I don't know.
How does that work? How does that all work?
I really don't know. I mean, I have no clue what that is, but I'm excited about anything Lord of the Rings. I have, you know, I think there's room for all of us. So I'm one of those. I'm a fantasy fan. And even when they want to peg us even against like House of the Dragon or this and that, I'm like, well, I'm watching it. You know, I met Matt Smith in the Critics' Choice, and we're like, yeah, you know, we've all hung out. It's fantastic.
So when do we see the Game of Thrones, Lord of the Rings?
Musical series. Episode.
Oh, musical episode. Oh, you took it one step further.
I mean, that would be fantastic. I just think, I mean, we're so different tonally, you know? We just saw two different shows, but I'm a fan of their stuff. But I'm also a massive fan of Lord of the Rings, and I just think it is the golden age for genre fans, you know. It is the golden age.
But then you were also on Mandalorian, so talk. Mandalorian, Lord of the Rings, and Game of Thrones together.
I'm here to shake it up. I have a few of the franchises to hit.
But yeah, I'm here to be the genre guy. I still, you know, what's up, Marvel?
Let's talk about that. Remember, what did you tell me?
Yeah, I have my superhero that I want to do, you know, and I love it, Hector Ajala and White Tiger. I think that's just another character, just fantastic, and it's I love characters that are improbable heroes, that are people that have got the worst deck dealt, you know, and that is my story, and I find that is many of our stories. And life is not just like this little journey of redemption. How many of us were bullied? How many of us were poor? How many of us cast away? How many of us, our identities were something that you couldn't be, you know? So it's like, we got, a lot of us got cards that were a bad deck, you know? So Hector Ajala is my other one. Hello, Marvel.
has Marvel reached out yet? Have you reached out to Marvel?
Marvel has reached out for different projects. They have, so I know I'm in their little radar. Have I gotten
their little radar? There's no little about Marvel, by the way.
I said the little radar because it's kind of cute. I've auditioned for other stuff. The characters have gone to other people, but I always think that I haven't gotten those roles because they're keeping me open for the one that I want to do. But you know, I mean, those casting directors, I have a very good relationship with the Marvel casting directors and with that whole team. And yeah, I'm super excited to keep going different fandoms.
So who did you audition to play?
Oh, I don't know if I can say that.
Oh, you can say it.
I have to remember the name of the character. Maybe you can put it in the piece, but the character that Will Poulter is playing now in Guardians of the Galaxy, mm-hmm. I forgot his name. So I was auditioning for that one. This is the most recent one. I really wanted that one. But Will Poulter looks amazing doing it, so I'm not mad.
Well, Guardians of the Galaxy is premiering here in LA tonight, actually.
I know. And that one was hard. That one was hard because I love that whole storyline. That's the only Marvel movie that I've gone, well, that and Black Panther, that I've gone to the movies multiple times to watch. I think it's so fun.
But I agree with you that if you didn't get it, it's not meant to be. There's something on the other side.
Absolutely. Always. That's the story of my life. I'm starting to trust that. I can't say I'm there.
It's hard. It's hard.
Yeah. I see it work often, you know. There's this one, I mean, I wanted to be, which one was it? I don't know if it was West Side Story or which one that I also really wanted to do. But then you look, if I had been on that, I couldn't have done Lord of the Rings, you know. So it always pans out. That's what I tell actors out there. Give it your 120%, whether it's the audition, whether it's the shooting, that's all you can do. Give it your all, let it reverberate, and it does, it lands. Mm-hmm. People talk about it, people remember it, and it comes like a boomerang. I mean, we met the red carpet, and we spoke, mm-hmm. and that little moment, then I'm sure they're like, hey, do you want to speak to Ismail? It's like, oh yeah, for sure, I met the guy, you know?
Yeah.
So those little moments really do reverberate. Just be kind, be authentic, and give of yourself, you know. Don't give it all, but keep a little, but just believe. I was just doing a podcast just now, and it's give it your all and have no regrets, whether their opinion sways your way, because we gotta understand that it's an opinion. Doesn't necessarily is the truth. Whether opinion sways your way or not, you know that you did your best, and that really gives you peace.
Let me ask you, because I relate, growing up very poor,
mm-hmm.
what was your big splurge you did when you made some money? What'd you buy?
Listen, I actually, you know that, it, because I love eating. My big splurge was I took my booty to Nobu.
That's a good one.
That was the first one. Then when I made, and then I bought an apartment.
Nice.
But it was, I still got it on the cheap. And then when I made a little bit more money, there is a story. Alfonso Gomez Rejon is a mentor, and I also part of my story is that I was couch surfing for almost like 5 years. And he knows that I want to direct, and I've directed before, and he's like, okay, well then you need to watch this film, that film. Is a big mentor of mine. And I said, oh, listen, I need somewhere to stay. His house was open, and he's like, okay, you can stay, but only if you read this and you watch this, da, 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 in his media room. And there was an Eames chair. I don't know if you know those chairs, the Eames chair.
Oh, yes. Yes.
You know the Eames chair. So yes. I sat there watching this catalog of films that this mentor of mine is giving me. And I mean, he has incredible taste in art as well. And I was on that Eames chair, and I said, when I'm able to have it, like, when I reach a moment in which I can have one of these, I will, you know, I love watching movies. So I invest in audio and image. And then that Eames chair was the last thing I needed. So when I made a little bit more, I got an Eames chair.
Nice.
You know, but it has a lot of meaning to me. Like, yeah. It really does.
Wow. Those are those moments. When you're... Let me ask you, though. Eames chairs are not cheap. Was there a hesitation when you're going to hand over the credit card going, I can't believe I'm making this purchase?
I think I'm still, you know, that it's in my apartment in New York, and it got delivered while I was away, and I just went back for my birthday, and it still had the plastic on. My parents were staying there, and I'm like, you guys, listen, live in my apartment as if it was yours, but the Eames chair, nobody sits on it. I went for my birthday, I took the plastic off, I sat on it for 5 days, put the plastic right back on. I actually got a little bit on sale.
Okay. Got a good deal. You know what?
We did get a good deal because it was a different wood than the one that I wanted. And it was ready to ship. But listen, the thing is that, as you say, you grew up in poverty, and I'm sure that you're very money conscious, you know, and there is a trauma about spending and about losing and about, I get emotional talking about this because it's so hard to rewire yourself. Everything, you feel guilty, you feel terrified to be back there again. But there is, this t-shirt I've had for like 10 years, the jeans are stained and whatever. I don't buy stuff, but sometimes you have to see the fruit of your work. You also have to enjoy yourself a little bit, where there is a dish that you like, you know, it's just little moments that humanize what you're doing. Even when I was homeless and couch surfing, I would save up for a little bit. And at least once a month, I would go to this one restaurant and have this sushi boat, you know, just to like I'm poor, but I'm not dead.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
And so I still hesitate with all of that. And I still see it. I'm like, what the hell did you do? You know, and even when people are gonna read this interview, they're gonna be an Eames chair, you know, whomever knows it. I'm like, oh my god, embarrassed that I spent that. But I think it's
you earned it. You earned it.
And life is kinda short, you know.
Life is this long. It is short.
It is. So you got to sometimes just enjoy certain things. I'm not super materialistic, but as I said, sometimes some things are fun, and sometimes the things you earn, and also when they have meaning and when they support something that you love. I think if you can, you should, you know, and balance yourself out in that way. I am by no means a splurger.
Everything mm-hmm. that I think about is with a lot of very conscientious of what I want to do. Like the apartment that I've been furnishing is like for so that friends can come in. I have a pull-out couch. Like it's all so that, you know, a lot of people opened their doors to me when I was mm-hmm. in that homeless period of like almost 5 years. And I always said, when I have a space of mine, it will always be open. And every single apartment that I've had, I was only able to have my first lease at 31. Wow. And every single apartment that I've had, I've never asked for rent. So many artists go through it. They stay. A friend of mine wrote an album there. Like a friend of mine wrote their first pilot there that got picked up. A friend of mine wrote chapters of a novel there. And it's like, I always said that I would, and I do. So spend your money, but I don't know. Make it make sense.
Yeah. Mr. Great. I could keep going on and on. This is wonderful. Congratulations on everything.
Thank you so much.
And thank you for your openness. I think that's one of the reasons I wanted to talk to you, because I knew you were open and it wasn't going to be these, you know, a canned interview. It wasn't going to be, you know, just the robotic soundbite, end quote. You really, you're living your truth, which is pretty amazing.
I appreciate that. No, I was very excited to talk to you because also, like, you know, we connected on it. I've seen on Twitter and I've seen your stuff. Yeah. And it's always a joy to speak with people that are interested in actually hearing your story and hearing your voice. Yeah. And it does, because it happens from both ways. Like sometimes you have people that subjects that are like, but you'll sometimes have the people asking you questions that you're like, oh my God.
I'm glad I'm not one of those.
No, you're not at all. So I really appreciate every moment. I mean, as I said before, of like going from voicelessness to voicefulness, that you open your publication to hear my story. So thank you. This was a lot of fun.
Awesome. This is great. Well, go back to shooting. Be safe. And hopefully next time we chat, it'll be in person.
I love that, man.
Thank you, sir. Take care.
Right. Take care.
Bye-bye.
That was Ismael Cruz Cordova, and that's it for this week's Just for Variety. Thanks for listening. I'll see you next time. Until then, make sure to follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Mark Malkin. And for all breaking and exclusive Hollywood news, go to Variety.com. See you soon.